Physicians should be able to have open and honest conversations with their patients without interference from the government.
The State Department says there's international condemnation against the government in Caracas that continues to spend millions of dollars on the country's military to keep dictator Nicolas Maduro in power, and nothing on humanitarian aid. USA Radio's John Clemens has more on the story.
Special Representative for Venezuela, Elliot Abrams, says Maduro spent $209 million for an air defense system from Russia this week. Meanwhile, President Trump has ordered additional humanitarian aid for Venezuela.
The USNS Comfort hospital ship is heading into the Caribbean and South America and will dock at a number of ports to bring medical care to Venezuelan refugees and local residents, while Russia is sending its warship, the Gorshkov, and more military technicians.
I'm John Clemens.
For USA Radio News, I'm Wendy King.
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
Welcome to Destination Hockey. We have a jam-packed episode in store for you, including an interview with Islanders superfan Patrick Dowd, a.k.a. Sign Guy. But first, here is your live and local weather forecast. Tonight, it's going to be beautiful out with a low of 65 degrees, and it will be completely clear, so you'll get a nice view of the moon. Tomorrow, Thursday, it will be sunny with a high of 89 degrees. That scorching heat will continue, and it will also be scorchingly hot throughout the weekend. 90 degrees on Friday, 89 degrees on Saturday, and 88 degrees on Sunday. Thunderstorms will start to be rolling in on the weekend, but besides that, get ready for another hot summer few days. We will be right back with Patrick Dowd.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
There are certain things that I just don't understand. And up there on my list is when teams refuse to trade down at the NHL draft. If you're going to take a player that no other team would select for another 20 picks, why not acquire more assets? In a league where every single selection is immensely valuable, it is mind-boggling to me that teams do not implore this plan more often. The Carolina Hurricanes, for example, a team that went to the Eastern Conference Final with over $20 million in cap space, are an outlier. Within an hour, the Canes traded picks 37 and 59 for 44, 73, 83, and 99. Pick value, probability, and volume are crucial concepts that teams just don't understand. But when utilized, teams can stock their farm system easily and efficiently just by making some simple maneuvers. If you do not know who you want to draft, trade back. If the player you want will be available in 10 picks, trade back. If you like a lot of late-round prospects, trade back. A seemingly simple concept has bewildered teams for years, and it is time for this to stop. With the NHL entering the analytical world, GMs must swallow their pride and go along for the ride. My name is David Lazar, and you are listening to Destination Hockey on the Hunterdon Chamber Radio. Trading back was certainly not a big theme at the NHL draft, but one thing that certainly was were young stars. Jack Hughes went to the New Jersey Devils, and Kaapo Kakko went to the New York Rangers, renewing the New York rivalry that we've all loved in the tri-state area. The Devils have been pretty bad for a while now. The Rangers have been bad for a little bit of time. But the Rangers, ironically, are executing this rebuild that they're going on perfectly. They sent a letter out to their fans, being completely honest and open with everything they're doing. They made some sensational trades, trading essentially every UFA that was pending that they had, acquiring the most assets possible. And finally, they're turning the corner. They got Kaapo Kakko, Jacob Trouba, Artemi Panarin looks like he could be in the fold next. The Rangers aren't scheduled to win until 2048 by recent projections, considering they haven't won in 20 years now. But I got to give the Rangers credit. They are doing a sensational job at rebuilding efficiently. And then the New Jersey Devils are also doing a fantastic job. Jack Hughes to the Devils was a really good selection. Personally, I'm not sure who I would have gone with. That was a really tough situation to be in for Ray Shiro, because I like both players, and honestly, I kind of like Kako better. He's more ready. He's like an Alexander Barkov, really strong forward. No one's going to beat him. He's already going to be one of the most tough physical presences in the NHL. I don't know. I don't know what I would have done, but if I'm the Rangers, I'm happy with either person. Jack Hughes has this kind of cocky, I'm better than you demeanor, which can go far, but he's more of a skill player, and those players are more likely to be a bust. I don't think Jack Hughes will be a bust, but all I'm saying is Kako might have been the safer pick. And another pick that was incredibly safe and definitely unique was Bowen Byron going to the Colorado Avalanche at number 4. He's a terrific offensive player. He does need to grow a bit defensively, but he's the best defenseman in the draft by a large margin. When you put him on the blue line corps with Cal Makar, Samuel Girard, Tyson Barrie, it gives the Avalanche this foundation that they can do wonders with. It gives you a Nashville Predators foundation, a Calgary Flames foundation, when you have one of the best defensive corps in the NHL. The draft pick that they got from Ottawa didn't become the number 1 overall pick. It didn't become Jack Hughes or Kaapo Kakko, which I'm sure they would have preferred, but it did allow them to make one of the best young farm system defensive organizations you could have. Byron's a small town kid. He has these stories about him that are pretty cool. He was in a group with all of his friends. He was the popular hockey player, and there was a kid by himself when his teacher told him to make groups for a group project. Byron's the type of kid that goes over and is in the group with the kid who doesn't have any friends. He's a nice guy. He is really just a good person, and he's the type of guy you want in the NHL. He'll probably get a 9-game regular season audition, and then they'll decide if they want to keep him or send him to the Vancouver Giants. But right now, he's good at everything, and he will be incredibly valuable in the NHL. Another guy that will have immense value, in my opinion, and that is Cole Caulfield. And I was shocked that he dropped to number 15 to the Montreal Canadiens. The Blues winning the Stanley Cup totally played a part in it, and pathos is a powerful thing. So the Blues, they win the Stanley Cup. They have this physical presence. They dominate everyone physically. So what do teams do? They go physical. They draft the big kids, and Caulfield drops. He's the best pure goal scorer in the draft. He's a stud. 72 goals in 64 games with the U.S. National Development Under 18 team. He broke the record set by Austin Matthews. He is legit. And the Canadians, they do have all sorts of offensive players, but not a single one of them is really that solid offensive scorer. And they finally got it. They got what they needed, a scorer who can dominate possession, get shots on goals, and really just get these amazing zone entries similar to Matt Barzal, but if he could score. This is the Ovi. This is the Alexander Ovechkin of the Montreal Canadiens. And finally, after years of losing, after years of this weird middle ground that the Canadiens were in, they get their guy at number 15. And ironically, the Flyers took Cam York a pick ahead of Montreal after trading back 3 selections and acquiring an extra second round pick. The Canadiens might have taken York over Caulfield, but the decision was made for them. Caulfield was their guy after York was selected, and it was the right one. I don't like that these defensemen were kind of going. It wasn't that strong of a draft for defensemen. Caulfield's the guy. The picks easily could have flip-flopped between Philly and Montreal, but this was the right move. And then some trades to take note of. These all happened on the second day of the NHL draft. The first day was pretty uneventful. But the biggest move was PK Subban to the New Jersey Local Devils for Steve Santini, Jeremy Davies, and 2 second-round picks. This was not a good return for Nashville. But the cap issues really cemented this. You're looking at a trade where PK Subban's going to Nashville. PK Subban's going to New Jersey, excuse me. But in return, going to Nashville, you're getting these low-level prospects, these depth players, but you're getting maybe Matt Duchene. You're getting maybe Dante Fabro, a young star that will take Subban's place. This isn't just on the paper trade. You're not getting Steve Santini, who, no offense, isn't the best player. Jeremy Davies, a promising prospect that's not a guarantee, and 2 second-round picks, which aren't really going to do much for you. You're getting the opportunity to add in free agency. You're getting the opportunity to give Dante Fabro a spot. This was an okay move for the Predators. Not great, but it could totally work out for them in the long run. I could see that happening. But this is a slam dunk for the New Jersey Devils. They essentially signed PK Subban, one of the best defensemen in hockey, albeit coming off a bad season with injuries. They are signing PK Subban essentially to a 3-year, $27 million deal. When this trade went down, I was under the impression for some reason that Subban had like 6 years left. He has 3. PK Subban's a good player. He's going to deal with a little bit of injuries. He's going to be a little bit of a, you know, showboat, but he's a great player, and he is the new leader of the Devils' defense. A trade that also didn't go great for one team, and that's JT Miller to Vancouver for goalie Merrick Mazanik, a third-round pick, and a conditional first-round pick. Miller scored at a 55-point-per-82-game clip over the past 3 years. He's a good second-line winger. He's good, but he hasn't really been able to stay healthy. He has a big contract, and this is what I want to highlight. This was a cap dump, and the Predators traded one of the best defensemen in hockey in a cap dump for depth players, and the Canucks gave up a first-round pick in classic Vancouver Canucks fashion. I'm not sure why they did this. That first-round pick and third-round pick will 100% be more valuable in 3 to 8 years down the line. I don't see any situation where JT Miller wins the Canucks a Stanley Cup and that first-round pick's a bust. Miller's under contract for 4 years, and they could probably re-sign him to a big extension after that, but you're looking at a top six forward here that you could have easily signed in free agency. You could make a run at Anders Lee. You could make a run at Gustav Nyquist. You don't have to make this trade. If Vancouver thinks that this can help them win a cup, fine. I guess it's the right trade to make. But Vancouver's once again in this delusional middle ground where I don't think they can win a cup. And I don't think their fans do, but for some reason their management, when we talked to Satira Shaw last season on Destination Hockey, they're in this weird we can always win mode when they need to commit to a rebuild. And they haven't done that, and now they're trying to turn the corner too soon, and it can be another few years in purgatory for the Canucks. When Miller's contract's up, Bo Horvat will also be a UFA. I just don't see this trade working out. And also, the pick was protected in 2020, so if Vancouver misses the playoffs in 2020, it becomes a 2021 pick. But we saw what happened to Ottawa. What if Vancouver has a tough 2 years and they're back rebuilding? They don't have their first-round pick. That could be costly. And another thing that was costly, the Toronto Maple Leafs giving up a first-round pick and a seventh-round pick to absorb Patrick Marleau's contract to the Carolina Hurricanes. Not really sure if I love this one. I know Toronto needs the cap, but Patrick Marleau's a good player. He's a good guy. He mentored the team, and I don't know if I would have given up a first-round pick to get rid of him, but it was the price to pay. They had to get this cap space. They had to get it soon, so they gave up the first-round pick. Marleau played in 82 games for the Leafs. Not your typical 40-year-old. He played in 82 games. It was certainly a down year. He had 16 goals, 37 points. That's not great for him, but that's still pretty good. It's not terrible. And, you know, that was the second worst season he's had since 2012. So Patrick Marleau is one of those guys where he has this aroma to him. It's Patrick Marleau, but he's still a productive player. So Toronto gives up the pick to absorb his contract to Carolina. I'm not sure if I love the move for Toronto, but it had to be done. Headlines were being made every day in this great league. And when we return, we'll talk about some more. A headline himself, Patrick Dowd, a.k.a. Sign Guy. This guy holds up signs. He's the Islander super fan, and he wants to talk about some more headlines relating to the New York Islanders. Artemi Panarin, possibly. Sergei Bobrovsky. A Belmont Park Arena. Anders Lee. Robin Leonard. There's a lot going on. So from the Destination for All Things Hockey, we will be right back with Patrick Dowd.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Sabía que de cada cinco personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de familia a familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterton at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterton, the voice for mental health in Hunterton County.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterton Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Welcome back to Destination Hockey. For today's interview, we have a very special guest joining us, Patrick Dadd. Welcome to the show.
Of course, David. Thank you for having me.
Of course. So this season was certainly something special. What was it like to go along for the ride?
Magical. And they say it's magical for a few reasons. Number one, nobody thought this was going to happen, and it did. And December 1st, pulling up to that parking lot at, say, 10, 11 o'clock in the morning, and then seeing these cars just pull in and everybody gather for the game against Columbus. And, you know, here we are again. What a magical moment that was, in addition to many others during the season.
So how important was cleaning house and bringing in trusted faces in Lou Lamoriello and Barry Trotz in order to achieve the success?
Well, that was big. And I think any Islander fan knows that, you know, throughout the years, we never really went out of the organization. We stayed within. And, you know, sometimes ownership has to make that decision. You know, Ledecky and Malkin obviously were wise enough people to go about that. And so, you know, we're getting Lou Lamoriello and Barry Trotz in there. Think about it. I mean, you know, here are some really big names out there, probably the best in the business. And, you know, Barry's coaching staff with Lane Lambert and John Gruden. Well, Scott Gomez is there now for the power play, but as we know, it hasn't been too successful. But good news, the Islanders did bring in Jim Hiller, who was 5 years under Bobrick. Bobcock and the power play with Toronto and Detroit. So, you know, you got a guy who in the power play might improve them because that's a big issue you need to work with. And then, of course, your goaltending coaches, Mitch Korn and Pierre Greco, and director of scouting, Ken Morrow. I mean, you think about that staff right there. These are very, very top-level people in the NHL. And, you know, bringing them in, that changes the whole culture of the team.
And another top person in the NHL, that's John Tavares, and he left for the Toronto Maple Leafs last offseason. But it did give the Islanders this chip on their shoulder. So how important was that, restoring the captaincy in Anders Lee? How did that help the Islanders become relevant again?
I think it was a collective, put it this way. In other words, this team wasn't surrounding themselves around Tavares. They were surrounding themselves around each other. So instead of a me, we had a we, and when I say we, meaning that we all are good players. There's no better player than anybody else. We're all equal parts. And, you know, again, nothing against John Tavares, although the reason he left and why he did was obviously a sour note, which I hope we can talk about at some point later in this interview. But, you know, I think it brought the team together in some ways. I think everybody said, okay, so the king is not here. We're all kings. And by doing that, you know, the Islanders picked up a couple free agents. And listen, when you have some good coaching and you have people that believe in the system, you're going to have a team that's going to be successful. And even with some of the people and the personnel that the Islanders, fans didn't think were going to be anything to be laughed. You know, they were going to be laughed at. You know, who's going to make the playoffs? The Islanders, blah, blah, blah. Guess what? Islanders make the playoffs, and they beat the Penguins. So that's just the start, and this is good things to come for the future.
Another historic element of this season was the return to Nassau Coliseum. You were there almost every game. How fantastic was that atmosphere?
Unbelievable. You know, sometimes when I talk to people about this, They don't quite understand what I'm telling them, but when I invite them to games and they actually come, they understand it entirely. And I had a couple of my daughters come to the games, a couple outside friends, and I have to tell you, when they left, they said, "Whoa, you aren't kidding. This is fantastic." And I guess what I mean is, there's just the whole environment. First off, you know, part of the Islander culture has been the tailgating. There's that whole commodity. I mean, you've been with me a couple times. We've tailgated. You know what it's like. We get together. We cook. We talk. We play some sports, hockey. We throw a baseball, a frisbee, whatever it might be. We gather. We get ready for the game. And then when you go into the Coliseum and you see that magnificent, beautiful building that's just intimate and personal, and then you see this Islander team come out, I mean, it's just amazing. It really is. And so I've brought people in there that have confirmed that this is really, truly a great experience.
So let's go by game, many of which we spent together, and let's talk about the favorite memories of this season. First one has to be the return to Nassau Coliseum. What did that mean for this fan base?
Well, yeah, that's exactly right. So bringing the Islanders back to the Coliseum, and you remember, the fan base, I think it's 80%, live on Long Island, so that's really where they belong, and they're going to belong there again in Belmont soon. Hopefully we can hit on that. But the truth of the matter is, the Coliseum is very special, and there were so many great moments. That Columbus game was one. If you go on, I can think Toronto with Tavares coming back was probably the most passionate, and then clinching the playoffs against Buffalo. So magic moments at the Coliseum, and just, you know, again, like I say, anybody who has ever been to the Coliseum and experienced this will just attest to the wonderful environment that the Coliseum and the Islanders bring you when you can do that kind of environment with the tailgating.
And then another remarkable night, that was in February on the 28th when the Islanders defeated the Maple Leafs in dominant fashion. John Tavares also made his return. Just how cool was that night as the fan base came together?
I would say that was the most passionate of the year because we wanted, the fans really wanted to let John know how they felt. And they did, and they were there early. I mean, I got there probably about 2 or 3 o'clock, which usually I try to get earlier, but I couldn't be there that day. But I knew there were people there since, you know, 8, 9 o'clock in the morning. And this whole commodity of Islander fans sharing the same passion, not hating John Tavares, but just really letting him know how disappointed we were. Because had he let us all know, we could have done something, and we would have got something in return. We never did. And that will haunt Islander fans for years. But I think we got it out of our system that night, and what a great night it was. Not only did they kick Toronto's you-know-what, but it was a passionate night. And I'll tell you, I ran into so many people that had the same feeling. They just wanted to get out of their system. John Tavares left us. He kind of screwed us. But guess what? We're going to know how we feel, and then we're going to move on.
And the Islanders did move on, had a better season than Tavares' Maple Leafs. They got 2 home playoff wins at the Barn against the Pittsburgh Penguins. And boy, that didn't even feel real. That was the craziest experience I've ever had in my entire life. Was that your favorite moment of the season?
Yes, absolutely. It tops it all. To be quite honest with you, that atmosphere at the Coliseum, and when Bailey scored the goal, and I got to tell you, I was sitting at the edge of my seat really wondering how this was going to play out. It was that first game against Pittsburgh. You know, come on, you've got Crosby, Malkin, Phil Kessel. You've got all these great players that have been just dominating the league for years, and they're facing the up-and-coming Islanders who have no chance. And here the Islanders have the home ice advantage back in their own barn, the old barn. And guess what? Bailey scores in overtime. And I'll tell you, I was taken off guard because I was right there, and I saw it. But what happened was, I believe it was Barzell at the post. And then it was like, I thought it went in, but it didn't. And everybody kind of around me, like, you know, hushed, like, ah. Oh. And then all of a sudden, it was a big eruption. I looked up. I was like, it's in a minute. And I'll tell you, that was the biggest moment of the year that solidified the Islanders as being, you know, beating Toronto that first game. And, of course, they went on to sweep the series.
So this was a great season. A lot more media attention, a lot more fans coming to the island. How were you able to, as a spokesperson for this fan base, make a personal mark on the team through your signs?
Well, two parts. One was the old traditional always believe, and that comes in all circumstances in life, whether it's through hockey or just personal situations. And Robin Leonard was a good example of that. But, you know, always believing. For instance, everybody wrote the Islanders off, oh, Tavares is gone, they're on a chance, no good. Well, listen, just believe in yourself. Believe in yourself at all times, and things will come. That's what the Islanders did. second part was I was very, you know, concerned about the Belmont situation and a lot of negativity amongst the small group of advocates, I guess you would call them, in Belmont, Elmont, that area over there, Floral Park. And I decided to make a petition, and the petition my daughter and I wrote together, and it was about supporting the Islanders, and it was called The Road to Belmont. So we put a petition out there, and we got about 11,000 signatures, just basically this sort of like, instead of the negativity towards the new arena, how about the positivity of it? So those are the two, I think, that stand out most.
And how did your Always Believe mantra change now that the Islanders, for the first time in a while, were actually good?
Well, you know, it's again, it's the sign goes far beyond hockey. It's life. And, you know, the Always Believe is really just about believing and having faith. And, you know, I have also a chaplain. And as a chaplain, I have a lot of belief. And I talk to a lot of people that don't have that. And I try to give that example of belief because it's there. And when people see through those dark gray clouds and those rainy days and see the sunshine and the blue skies, they come to realization of that things are good. And it's just a matter of, like, this smoke you have to go through. So Always Believe is just something that's, you know, great for Islanders, great for everybody.
And circling back to this, you are, you know, you do help people. And another person who helps people this year, that was Robin Lehner. What he did was fantastic for the fan base, the state,
yeah,
and the entire NHL. We watched him firsthand. We saw his interview when he cursed on live TV, which was hilarious. What did he do for just the entire hockey world, telling his story?
You know what? He's a human being. You know, he's not just a hockey player. He's a person who, like anybody else, can go through ups and downs. And I think anybody listening tonight or anybody you talk to will tell you some story about some bad times in their life and some troubles and trials and trying to figure out how to move forward. Obviously, Robins were very sincere and very deep, and he had some issues. But I'll tell you something. You know, when he came over to Islanders, the first thing he did was to admit that he had some issues and seek help, which was fantastic. That was very good for everybody because we all are part of this equation. And, you know, the Islanders staff did a great job of keeping him in check, keeping him, you know, monitored, making him believe in himself, so to speak. And, you know, it kind of resonates to, like, us in general. Everybody, you know, any human being, we all go through tough times. So that was remarkable that he was able to come out as a professional, share his personal story, and let the world know what he was going through and how he's going forward. And as being a New York Islander, he credited the Islander organization with giving that sort of gift of help that he needed. So this was great for everybody. And again, I'm very proud of the guy. I'll tell you, he was one of my favorite players this year.
So now on to the future. For those of you just tuning in, you are listening to Destination Hockey on the 100 in Chamber radio station, and I am here with Patrick Dowd, a.k.a. Sign Guy. So we're moving on to the future, and one important piece of the future is the restricted free agents, unrestricted free agent that Lou Lamoriello needs to lock up. Two that have already been locked up, that's Brock Nelson and Jordan Eberle. How important is that for the future that those two guys are going to be in the blue and orange long term?
Very important because they're very good players. Unfortunately, they didn't have good coaching under their belts for the last couple of years until Barry and Lou came along. Well, I say Lou just because Lou got Barry here. But Barry, you know, and his coaching staff, and again, you know, we talked about them earlier, these are some really professional people out there. So these players now understood the game a little better under sort of a better toolage, if you will. And I think they're important pieces to this team because they're very good players, and they're still young enough where they're actually in the prime, if you could think about it. So, yeah, locking them up was important. Some people said, well, do you think Brock Nelson? I said, listen, Brock Nelson's a great player, and so is Eberle. The issue was they just never had the real good coaching, but now they do. So, I think that's very important they locked them up, and I think that's a good move.
Two players who aren't locked up, however, that is Anders Lee and Robin Lehner. Let's focus on Anders Lee first. Things are honestly not looking great. Unlike the Tavares situation, things are pretty transparent, and it just looks like the two sides are far apart on contract negotiations. Do you think the Islanders should go a little bit over budget and match some of Lee's wants?
Well, I do because he's one of my favorite players, but I don't because I think there's other pieces of the puzzle that need to be put into the play. So you have free agents out there, and obviously Panera and Duchesne and all those guys, Pavelski and Zuccarello, not that they're going to be on their target. There are a couple of guys out there. If you can land one of those and you can, you know, free up that salary. Don't get me wrong. I love Anders Lee. He is truly, I mean, every time he comes in the ice, I have a sign for him. He taps the boards. He's my favorite player, actually, other than Robin Leonard. But I just, you know, for some reason, I think Lou is thinking of a long-term plan, and I think with Anders' age, I believe he's 28, 29, and he's looking for a long-term contract. So I'm not sure if Lou's willing to do that, and I think Lee might just think that this is like, you know, he wants maybe 8 years, 7 years, something like that, and I think Lou's looking to give him maybe 4 or 5. So that's something they have to work out. It could hinge on some free agents that they're looking to pick up, and that might make a decision there. You know, listen, as long as cool heads prevail here, the right equation works out. I would hate to see Anders Lee leave, but if it would better the team and it would be better for him, then that would be better for everybody.
One thing, however, with the situation that has personally irked me is many media members, especially those from Toronto, are comparing this to John Tavares and saying this is the identical situation. Lee's going to go to Minnesota and go home. How is this so much different?
It's not anything comparable, and it's very different. You're absolutely right, David. So, you know, okay, so I get the idea that, you know, Lee wants to go back to Minnesota. That kind of area was, you know, his stomping grounds years ago, and Toronto was Tavares' stomping grounds. But listen, you know, there's a lot of speculation, and again, media has a good point of view and sometimes a very speculative point of view. And quite often it's more on the latter, which means it's just speculation. So who's to say what really is going to happen? We, you know, next time we speak on this interview, we might find out Anders Lee remains the captain of the team, and he's got this contract. So, you know, as far as I can say right now, it's a wait and see. There's no comparison, that's for sure.
Another player, Robin Leonard. He wants to be back. The Islanders want him back. So what's taking so long?
Well, I think he is going to be back. Again, I think it depends on a couple of free agents. And I think, you know, you're talking about a couple of guys from Columbus, the goalie over there. And he might be in play, although I don't know if that's true or not. Again, speculation, but then the Islanders have some very good goaltenders overseas. And, you know, it just might be this long-term plan. Personally, I think they should lock him up. And if Rob, the smart guy, and his agent's smart, you know, it'll take a year or two or three, whatever, and we'll go from there. And listen, just think about this. Anybody who has a job, you go out and you do your job. You do it on a daily basis. You don't do it on a, you know, yearly basis or a seven-year basis. It's a daily basis. So, you know, why lock up these guys in these long-term contracts when you can give them shorter contracts and see what they do within that short term? And if they're doing well, they get rewarded. And if they don't, then, you know, this week, you know, look at Rick DiPietro's contract, 15 years. And I think they might still be paying him off in addition to Alexei Yashin. I mean, you know, these long-term contracts just aren't really smart. You know, again, if somebody gets hurt, you know, things like that. So Robin Leonard deserves to come back. I think he will. And, you know, it'd be good for the team, good for Long Island, and good for everybody.
The Islanders have been searching for their franchise goalie for years. Yaroslav Halak came in. He had some shine, but it didn't work out. Rick DiPietro was a failure. Ever since Billy Smith, it seems like the Islanders have been searching for their guy. And is Robin Leonard, it seems like he's the guy that has just fallen into the Islanders' lap. Is Lou Lamoriello potentially making a small mistake here by searching for Sergei Bobrovsky, looking at Ilya Sorokin, looking at Linus Soderstrom, when the answer is right in front of his eyes?
I think the answer is Robin Leonard right now, personally. You know, in terms of what Lou's thinking, and again, Lou's the best in the business, so, you know, in all fairness, you got to give him a lot of credit, and he's got a resume that backs him up. I'm just a real supportive fan, and you know, I root for the team and hold some signs up and all, and I've got some history with him, but, you know, Lou's a guy who does this for a living. So, you know, those are difficult questions. You know, personally, I think that Robin Leonard deserves this contract. I think he should be here. I think it's good for everybody. But, again, there may be a long-term plan that we don't know about, and I guess we have to just say, in Lou we trust.
So moving on to some sad news that was released yesterday. That was the 2019-2020 NHL schedule. It was disappointing for the Islanders because there were these little under-the-table rumblings that the Islanders might go back to the Coliseum full-time, might get a few more than 20 games, but it looks like after rumblings the Islanders will split their season. How sad is it for the Islanders fan base to have to go play 20 games at Barclays Center?
I can tell you quite truthfully, for most fans I know, it's not a good situation. You know, the problem is, and it's always been, the location. The fact that the building is not hockey-oriented, it's for basketball. I have to say, honestly, the staff at Brooklyn have done a good job of welcoming Islander fans and made some changes over the years. So it's a welcoming place, and there are some pros and cons, but there are more cons than pros. And for the hockey fan that lives on Long Island and has to get on a train, and God only knows what issues you lie getting there and back, and there have been many, that's a long journey to watch your favorite team.
But we talk positivity, and that's what you preach. So even though fans might not like Barclays Center, why must fans make the trip to the Brooklyn and support their team?
Two reasons. First off, you do love your team, and you support them, and you should be glad they're still on Long Island and Brooklyn, and they will be on Long Island long-term with Belmont. But in the interim, you know, it's a couple of things. It's a business, number one, and the Coliseum doesn't have the suites to provide the sort of income that the ownership and what make the wheels go around. So, you know, I think Coliseum is a little over, you know, 10, 12, 14 suites. In Brooklyn, you've got, I think, over 100 and something, and that brings in a lot of business. But, you know, again, if you're a real hardcore Island fan, and I know you are, you know, you make the trip out there, and then you look forward to the future. And the future right now will be consisting of half the season in Brooklyn, half the season at the Coliseum. So you've got kind of a split. And you also look forward to Belmont coming up. And with that being said, you kind of go with the flow. And you love your team. You support them.
And you're close to John Ledecky. He was preaching your survey and your petition for the New York Islanders to play on Belmont Park. Can you provide some justification and just some insight that you know about why this split must happen for fans that are unaware?
It's about money. It's business, and it's also sort of an agreement they had with, you know, with the Brooklyn people. You know, I don't want to name names because there's a couple there, and I don't really like those people. But the bottom line is it's a business, and it has to be done. And also the NHL is big into it. You know, Gary Bettman is not going to allow a non-revenue-generating team survive in the NHL because it's all about, you know, it's all about, at the end of the day, it's about money. I hate to say it. It shouldn't be, but it is. And so they're not going to survive at the Coliseum. The seating doesn't have the capacity. There's less than, you know, there's less than 14,000 seats there. They don't have the suites. They really don't get the revenue. So they're not, the money's not coming in. So they have to be at Barclays until the Belmont is built. So it's sort of, I guess money makes the world go round, unfortunately.
And Belmont Park is in full swing. It looks like finally the owners will be delivering their promises as they have continuously, and Belmont Park will start to be built. How fantastic is it that John Ledecky, Scott Malkin are following through on their promise made to fans and continuing this growth of this franchise?
Remarkable. And the reason I say remarkable is, first off, nobody thought it was going to happen. You asked anybody that I knew, or the outside world, or any kind of world, and they would say, oh, yeah, Islanders going to get arena done in Long Island or New York? Yeah, great. Good luck, buddy. Guess what? It's happening, and I'll tell you why it's happening, because you have professional people that are running the franchise. It starts with the owners. Scott Malkin is probably the driving force behind the Islanders. He's a guy who builds things. In Europe, he builds them all the time. This is what he does for a living. This is why he's very rich. John Ledecky is, I don't mean to say sidekick, because that's not what I mean intentionally, because I happen to like John. He's a great guy. John is more the PR guy, and he's the guy that goes out into the crowd, goes out into the communities, and finds out what we need to do for this team. What is the right decision? And he always says that fans are stockholders, and what we need to know is, why are they investing in this team? Why are they coming to games? And if they're coming to games, what do we need to know that will get him to come to more games? And, you know, again, he's very good at what he does. So, again, you know, these guys here have done a fantastic job of getting this dream built, which is going to be Belmont Park, and it will be announced soon. And, you know, I was wrong on the Tavares thing and a few others, but I will tell you this one, I'm 100% right. And it's going to happen, and we're just going to find out soon. Within, it's just an environmental issue that's holding us up. And this announcement will be made very soon, and there will be a shovel in the ground as soon as possible, and the islands will have a permitted home on Long Island, and they will also have public transportation, which is great, because you can drive and you can tailgate and all, but there won't be a ton of that, but there'll be public transportation. And one of the things that they're looking at is on the very north side of Belmont Park, which is part of the property, which goes right across the Cross Island, if I'm correct. And the main line of Long Island Railroad could easily build another station, not so much for people to park there, but just to get on and off, and there could be a shuttle. And I believe that's the main plan that's going to be in place for the Islanders to get people to Barclays, I'm sorry, into Belmont, because you won't. The problem is if you're going to go to Belmont Park, there's only one line, one spur that gets you from Jamaica. And that's just not feasible because with the traffic and all the times of the day, it's just not an issue because what's happening is everything is going east and a lot of people are coming west. So the new station that they're proposing, by Belrose, I believe it, over that area there, on the main line could be a very, very good opportunity for fans to take public transportation. So good things are happening and we just have to stay tuned, but the shovel will be in the ground soon. And next time we talk, we can talk about that because that's going to be a memorable moment in Islander history.
So what's your timetable, you think? And this would be the first time the Islanders ever get their real arena like Belmont Park. Do you think this could be it's announced tomorrow, or do you think it's late July, or maybe it goes and draws out into the season?
No, I think it could be tomorrow, yes. More than likely within, let's see, we're at the 26th of June, so I'm going to say within the next few weeks we should get some information, and when it breaks, it's going to break large, and then they're going to have some ceremony, putting the shovel in the ground, and they're going to get things moving. Again, Malkin is very good at this, and another guy that's very important in this is Richard Brown with the Sterling Project Development Group, and he's instrumental too. So we have some really key players here that are going to get this thing built.
So moving on to Artemi Panarin, he is the big fish on the ice. Belmont Park is the big fish off the ice. The Islanders actually have a meeting with him, and they're one of the three final finalists along with the Islanders' arch-rival, the Rangers, and the Florida Panthers. Is this a legitimate possibility, or is it one of those pipe dreams?
The reason I hesitate and laugh is just because of the past history. First off, you got the Rangers, and the Rangers are always big. They're always willing to get people into the city and all. But think about this. If you're realistic, you've got Lou Lamoriello doing some business now. And I also believe that Florida's interested in those guys, too. But I truly think at the end of the day, he's going to come to the decision. And I think Lou might be able to lure him over just because there's enough to go on and more of a better future or a brighter future with the Islanders than, say, the Rangers. But again, that's a tough one.
So whether it's Panarin, whether it's Zuccarello, whether it's Pavelski, how important is adding a top goal scorer for the Islanders?
Essential. 100%. That is the number one thing. Again, we talk about, the Islander games. If you look through the season and if you go game by game and if you're a real fan and you follow it, you'll remember this game where they had a power play and things didn't work or they just didn't hit that big goal scorer who could put the puck in the net, and that was the key. But that was the difference between the Islanders winning probably another 10 games, if not a dozen games alone, having that one player, if not two. So that is essential to the Islanders' plan, and I'm pretty confident that Lou is not going to let us down. I know the trade deadline was a little, people were disappointed. We thought we were going to make a splash. I think that we have some very professional people looking at the situation from afar and then also close, but making good decisions, not rash decisions. So maybe the trade deadline, they were overachieving, and they just said, let's see what we can do. And they did do well. They got into two rounds. And by the way, I wish that Washington had won because I think they would have beat Washington, truthfully. I don't know why. But think about the Islanders' success this year and Lou just staying patient. So I'm thinking maybe there's a good chance that they will land one of these free agents, if not two. And if they do, that scoring punch is going to be essential, and it's going to probably be key to the Islanders' success.
Nick Leddy, Thomas Hickey, two defensemen that the Islanders could trade in a move for a top forward. Do you think they could be available, or will the Islanders be going the free agency route?
100%. they're going to get moved.
Okay, well, you heard it here first. Thomas Hickey and Nick Leddy apparently on the move. And finally, before we let you go, let's get a prediction. How did the Islanders do next season?
I love predictions. They're going to do very well. So, again, we go back to the coaching staff. We go back to the whole change of culture. We have games at the Coliseum. We have a better locker room because we don't have one individual that's better than others. And we have a collective group of people together as a unit, from the coaching staff to the players to everything involved with the fan base. They are going to be good this year. They start 6 out of the first 7 games at home, a couple at Barclays, a couple at the Coliseum, however that works. Bottom line, I'm looking for Islanders to be better than they were last year and each year improve. And truthfully, you all to ask about predictions, I'm looking at a couple of big free agents coming on board and the Islanders coming together as a group. And hopefully when they get into Belmont in the next couple of years, they can get that Stanley Cup that we're looking for.
So that was a tremendous interview with Islanders supervan Patrick Dowd, a.k.a. Sign Guy. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks, David. I appreciate it. Anytime, let me know.
Of course. So you can catch him sitting front row at all Islanders games this season with his world-famous signs. Another city with a lot of signs, and that is Las Vegas, and they'll be in the spotlight in a few minutes. From the destination of all things hockey, we will be right back.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Hello, this is Nicole Smith, host of Happy to Help. Would you like to discover the secret to happiness? I talk to volunteers, executive directors, fundraisers, and authors about how nonprofit engagement enriches their lives. We thrive when we have a sense of purpose in our lives. Philanthropy is the new community. Tune in to Happy to Help every Wednesday at 10 a.m. to discover how to find your purpose and live well by doing good.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Vegas took the NHL by storm, making the Stanley Cup in their first season. Vegas was and still is one of the best stories in sports history. But finally, to the delight of many hockey fans, Vegas is facing some adversity. The salary cap has been set at $81.5 million, and Vegas, the team that just entered the NHL, somehow has already got themselves tied up to $90 million in contracts. It is not a matter of if trades will be made. It is a matter of when trades will be made and who will go. With David Clarkson on the long-term injured reserve, some good news, $5.25 million will be coming off the books. But Vegas will still need to do some maneuvering. Barring a major trade, the Knights' top 6 forwards are all under contract, which is a very good thing. The third line, however, is where the trades will need to come in. Cody Eakin and or Eric Halla will need to go, as will restricted free agent Nikita Gusev. William Carrier, Ryan Reeves, and RFA Thomas Nosek could make up the fourth line, but could also be traded. Add a few league minimum signings, and Vegas's bottom six will certainly 100% look different. And on defense, Colin Miller, Nick Holden, and John Merrill could be the ones to go. If one defenseman and one forward are traded, Vegas will most likely be fine. Sure, Vegas will have some troubles. However, cap issues are only bad when you are a bad team. And with Vegas shaping up to be a competitor for years to come, this is a small price to pay. Vegas is a sensational hockey team. They are. I'm not going to lie. And when they have $90 million tied up, it's only a bad thing if they're tied up to bad players. But Vegas has some stars. They've got some young players tied up to these really solid long-term deals. And their GM, George McPhee, will do everything he can to continue this success. This is a good problem to have. It truly is. Vegas will continue to win, will continue to have good contracts. They don't have one bad one on their books. And maybe you trade Colin Miller, who's got a $3 million cap hit. Maybe you trade Eric Halla, he's got a $2 million cap hit. Cody Eakin coming off a great season, he's got a $3 million cap hit. There are guys that could go. And you could easily clear up that $6 million in cap space that you need. So Vegas is fine. Teams envy Vegas. They're the expansion team. They're the new guys on the block. And they are doing everything right. William Karlsson, another player, he was just extended to an 8-year, $5.9 million per year contract. This is a really good player. A top center. And sure, he might regress back to his Columbus ways, which is always a risk. And signing someone like that to 8 years is not always the best idea, but William Karlsson's also a 30-goal-a-year guy, 60-point-a-year guy, good in the community, good on the ice, good in the locker room. You want him on your team. And for $5.9 million a year, with the cap going up, it is a fine extension. Malcolm Subban, the backup goaltender of Vegas, he's an RFA. What type of contract will he get? Right now, it's looking like anything above minimum might not work for him. So, does he get traded? It's possible. Vegas does have an extra second-round pick. Excuse me. Vegas does have an extra second-round pick next year. Could they move that in a cap-dump trade? But again, Vegas really doesn't have this one player that's a bad contract. They could have moved David Clarkson on the long-term injury reserve, but they just will put him on the long-term injury reserve and pay his bonuses. It will affect their cap slightly, but Vegas is in good shape. I'll say it again. But one thing that might hurt them is they always like to add at the deadline. Can they do that with no salary cap space? No. So if Vegas wants to add at the deadline, like they've made these two huge splashes the last 2 years with Tomas Tatar and Mark Stone, they're not going to be able to do it if they've got no cap space, so they will need a little bit of cushion. Teams that are willing to give up their cushion completely will happen on July 1st, moving on to free agency. Silly season is beginning. The best time of the year is upon us, and big players are about to move teams. Artemi Panarin, he's the first guy. We talked about it with Patrick Dowd. He might be coming to the New York Islanders, and that's pretty surprising. I don't think it will happen yet. You have to convince me otherwise, but Lou Lamoriello is doing something fishy, and there is some weird stuff going on Long Island. Why is Robin Leonard not re-signed? He wants to be back. He's not even speaking to other teams. Is there some weird agreements where Lou Lamoriello is saying, hey, let me try something with Sergei Bobrovsky, Artemi Panarin. Let's see if we can get a tandem going where both these players are coming together. Hold on a second. Could that be happening? Maybe. Because the Islanders right now are in this situation where they want both guys. I don't know if I agree with it, with Robin Leonard waiting for a contract, but the Islanders got this weird plan going on. Could Artemi Panarin be in the fold? Maybe. Matt Duchene, he will most likely be going to Nashville. They will probably give the money that they just saved on PK Subban right to Matt Duchene. I don't know if I agree with that as well, but Duchene is a good center. Nashville has been lacking that. Joe Pavelski, this one's tough, but I do feel like he might be on his way to Dallas just because San Jose has not made any attempt to really, you know, push hard on him. He's their captain. He feels disrespected. Dallas has the cap space. They're losing Zuccarello. Could they overpay Pavelski on a short-term deal? It's possible. Matt Zuccarello, he's the guy that could be leaving Dallas. I think he will be just because if Dallas re-signs him, they have to give another first-round pick to the Rangers. So not only are you re-signing him and paying him a big contract, you're giving that first up to New York. I don't like that if I'm Dallas. I think they let him go. Jake Gardner, a top defenseman, could he be on his way to Vancouver? Could he be on his way to a team like Winnipeg if they need defensemen? Or could he be back in Toronto? A lot of weird teams out there. I don't know what's going to happen. But speaking of Winnipeg, Tyler Myers is a guy. It doesn't look like he's going to be back, and that's solely because he's going to get some insane contract from somebody. Vancouver's looking like they're going to try to pay him 7 years, 50. That's going to be a disaster waiting to happen. But one thing that could save them is Roberto Luongo, a fantastic player who had a fantastic career, has retired. I wish him the best. But a little weird caveat about that is due to some weird recapture penalties that the NHL salary cap has imposed, Vancouver will be paying him $3 million per year to the next 3 years. I don't know where that money's going. I should research that a little more because that's one of those weird salary cap caveats that I don't really know about. But Roberto Luongo will be on Vancouver's cap. Will that sway them away from a Tyler Myers trade? That is also possible. And then you've got the duo in Carolina, Peter Mrazek, Curtis McElhinney. I don't know. I don't know about this one. I think that you see one of those guys back for the sake of the Carolina Hurricanes. I hope it's Mrazek, but it could be McElhinney. And then they try to go with a weird tandem of a prospect. They just traded with Chicago for a goaltender. There's a lot of options there. But Carolina's on this salary cap, and you don't know what's going to happen because they are on an internal budget, and they don't like to budge. So that's free agency. It's crazy. Next week will be fantastic. We've got a great interview planned with an NHL free agency expert. But until then, guys, that concludes another great episode of Destination Hockey. You can catch us on Instagram at drive4, F-I-V-E, Twitter at drive45_, and on Facebook at the official Destination Hockey page. It was a pleasure to talk hockey with you. Finally got some Islanders in the show. But from the Destination for All Things Hockey, we'll see you next week back with a free agency special.
What do you want to do when you grow up? When we were young, it's a question we were often asked. As we get older, our passions become clearer, our pursuits become careers, and if we're diligent, we begin to plan for the life we want to live. That's why, at Ameriprise Financial, we ask what's most important to you. Starting with our confident retirement approach, your Ameriprise Financial Advisor will ask questions that help you arrive at a customized plan that allows you to realize your goals today, tomorrow, and throughout retirement. With the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant. Call Michelle Heide and Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 16 Lee Street, Units 1B and 1C in Clinton, New Jersey. The confident retirement approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, a registered investment advisor.
USA Radio News with Wendy King.
A top EPA official who helped lead the Trump administration's rollback of Obama-era restrictions of carbon emissions is now resigning amid a congressional probe into whether he improperly aided former industry clients. EPA Assistant Administrator Bill Wareham is expected to depart in a few days. Ethics questions have dodged Wareham since his 2017 nomination by President Trump. He long represented the fossil fuels and chemical industries as a Washington lawyer. The House Oversight Committee has subpoenaed testimony from White House Counselor Kellyanne Conway. The federal agency says that she should be fired for many repeated violations of the Hatch Act, which prohibits employees in the executive branch from engaging in certain political activities. Chairman Elijah Cummings.
There are rarely issues that come before our committee that are so clear-cut.
This is USA Radio News.
Liberty Mutual Insurance presents... Doug.
Is that your pet Emu?
He's my partner, Limu. And we're here to tell you that Liberty Mutual customizes your car insurance so you only pay for what you need.
So is he only an Emu because it rhymes with Limu, as in Liberty Mutual?
Well, I won't...
So this is just a clever way to get people to remember...
...of precipitation. No wind at this time. Today is Tuesday, March 6, 2018. Sunny to partly cloudy, a high of 49. Winds east southeast at 5 to 10 miles an hour. Tonight will be rain and snow showers this evening, turning all snow overnight, a low of 31. Winds east at 5 to 10 miles an hour. Chance of precipitation 90%, and 1 to 3 inches of snow is expected tonight. Tomorrow, periods of snow, temps nearly steady in the low to mid 30s.